Welcome to episode 92. How many of you feel tired, have low energy, notice changes in your body composition, or struggle with decreased performance in exercise and sport? I'm sure it's crossed your mind. It must be my hormones. My hormones must be off to explain these changes. In reality, these are such common symptoms, especially for pregnant and postpartum women during the menopause transition. But honestly, don't they also sound like what it feels like to be burnt out, have work stress, or the cost of juggling it all as a mom? My friend and colleague, Brittany Klingman, who has been on this podcast several times before, recently sent me an email saying basically, "Mel, I need to talk about a personal experience, one that I know other women are grappling with." Along with being a physiotherapist and busy mom, Brittany is an Olympic weightlifter who started experiencing symptoms that so many of her clients had also described. Low energy, mood and sleep disturbances. Her performance was feeling compromised, and she even started noticing incontinence. She says, "Given I was in my early 40s, I assumed I was starting the perimenopause journey." So she went to see her doctor to discuss options, and it was something completely different. Also joining Brittany and myself today is Nova Scotia-based dietitian Melissa Hardy, who has opened Brittany's eyes to the importance of nutrition as fuel. In this episode, Brittany shares not only what she has learned along the way as an athlete, despite feeling she was eating a well-balanced diet. Melissa also shares how low energy availability also affects so many other populations, including those that are pregnant and postpartum, menopausal, are those that are just busy, busy, busy. We hope that you take away that of course your hormones are important and need to be considered when you just aren't feeling like yourself, but hormones can't be blamed for everything. I'll be right back with Melissa and Brittany. Listeners, have you ever heard of the benefits of using a high-quality compression garment during pregnancy, after birth, or to address feelings of vulnerability, maybe in your tummy, or heaviness in your undercarriage? Did you know the evidence tells us that using these garments can decrease pain, ease apprehension, and increase the ability to move with comfort in your day if you have these unwanted symptoms? I'm grateful to have SRC Health as a podcast sponsor, and I want to take the time to tell you about their high-quality products. Using a revolutionary fabric created by medical professionals, SRC has designed a line of compression shorts and leggings that are made to support your back, tummy, and pelvis in pregnancy, or help you feel less pain and more confident with movement as you recover after pelvic surgery or birth. Their products have helped many for symptoms like incontinence, diastasis, and prolapse. I also have to add their customer service is like no other because they stand behind their products. Check out their full line. Head to their website, www.srchealth, and enter the code THEPELVICFLOORPROJECT, all capital letters, at the checkout because you'll get 10% off. Don't your mind and body deserve the support? Okay, Brittany, I'm happy that you are back and that you've brought Melissa with you. Will you start off by explaining, like, why did you want to talk about this topic?
Yeah. Well, first of all, thanks for having me back. And this topic came to be from a personal space. So I'm now 41 and I participate, as you know, in the sport of Olympic weightlifting. And a couple years ago, I had the opportunity to compete nationally and go to try and basically break one of the records that were held for that particular weight class. But for that, I needed to cut a little bit of weight from where I normally lived. And the process in and of itself at the time was, I'd say, extremely positive. But as a part of that, I kind of just, my diet naturally changed around eating. Like, I just developed different habits and kind of just a different routine around food that kind of stayed. And then the following year, this past year, I competed at Worlds. And so as part of that was needing to be at that weight class again. So it involved another, like, being in a kind of a short-term deficit food-wise, energy-wise. And during that time, I started to notice some changes. Initially, it was menstrual cycle changes. normally I'm like pretty much like clockwork, 28 days or so, and I started trending a little shorter around like 26. I then started to notice like weird, like I'm having some months where I don't think I'm ovulating. Then I started to notice some sleep disruption and then some mood disturbances. And then I started having some athletic incontinence. And I was like, okay, well, like these are all things that I see in front of me in the clinic all the time around people navigating perimenopause. And with my bias as a pelvic floor physio, I was like, oh, well, these are all consistent with perimenopause. I'm about, 8 years out from menopause. It certainly could be falling within this normal timeline. As part of going to my family doctor to discuss hormone replacement therapy, he's like, why don't we just like do a complete blood panel and rule out any red herrings and make sure nothing's weird in your blood work? And I was flagged for kidney disease. And so as a part of that, my mental brain just like freaked out and I reached out to Melissa because the internet nutrition, the nutrition space is an overwhelming space to navigate anyways. Diet culture, all the like, you should do keto, you should intermittent fast. Like, what's the best way for body composition changes and weight loss and energy? And, it's complicated. But that health marker flag, was my trigger to reach out to Melissa. And she was so lovely in her, how thorough she was with her history. And in the end, she's like, Britt, I think you might, some of these symptoms may be a result of low energy availability and not having enough fuel for your performance and then all the other things that your body needs. And it was just a really humbling experience. I'll full disclosure, just like say that I came in with my blinders on, right? Like anyone in their health profession has their own bias around the way they interpret symptom presentation. So it was like such a wonderful learning experience, not only for myself to make those health related changes, but from a caseload perspective and every single individual that comes in to speak to me now, it is at the forefront of my brain to screen for those questions around fueling. And fortunately, now I have a great team member that I can refer clients to manage. Help manage people like holistically.
And obviously, I'm excited for Melissa to introduce herself. But before we do that, will you just like you've already talked a little bit about your athletic kind of personality, but will you just tell everybody a little bit more about yourself? Where are you? Why are you here? And then let's shift to Melissa so she can introduce herself.
Sure, yeah. So I'm a physio. My name's Brittany. I'm in Halifax. I'm a physio. I practice in orthopedic private practice as well as pelvic health. I'm a mom and of two amazing humans. And yeah, that's me.
Are they amazing all the time? No.
Yes,
I'm having an
they're always.
interesting mom day. I wouldn't put that like adjective before mine today. Melissa, will you introduce yourself?
For sure. So, I think I'll just get started by just acknowledging how, the three of us are here having this conversation because it was 2 years ago when I was pregnant with my son that I heard Brittany speak on your podcast about exercise in pregnancy. So we really have come full circle here. But I'm a dietitian. I focus in sport nutrition. I'm located in Antigonish, Nova Scotia, but from Deer Lake, Newfoundland. And you will definitely hear my accent at some point through the chat today. And I mostly see athletes, but I see a lot of everything because you are this old private practice dietitian in a small town. So I would say I'd focus in sport and endurance sport specifically, but I cast a wide net.
That's great. And so I've done an episode before with one of the local dietitians. We were focused a little bit more on postpartum nutrition. And so obviously we'll be tying that in today, but I thought I was really excited to talk about this because I think this is such an important thing. We just don't think about food as fuel as much as we should. I think like sometimes I think food is such, we have food in such abundance in a lot of our countries, and so we just assume that we're eating healthy or we're getting what we need. But let's talk a little bit about, because you've already kind of summarized the topic in a lot of ways, Brittany. But so you, if we take your story and we go from, I was having some different symptoms. I thought I was perimenopausal and that I was going to leave with some hormone therapy, and that was going to be the answer to my prayers. I met Melissa, and I learned a lot about fueling my body. I think we need to take it back to some details quickly and just explain, what if we talk a little bit about some, you already mentioned low energy availability, and a lot of people will have heard the term red S, but some won't. But I wonder, Melissa, if you want to start with talking a little bit about, will you explain what Brittany was talking about when she said low energy availability, and like, what does that term mean? And what are some of the other terms that people might have heard about that are in a way related?
Yeah, so I think maybe we'll start by talking about REDS or red S or relative energy deficiency in sport. So there was a recent consensus update into the IOC consensus statement this fall, and the term is now just REDS or relative energy deficiency in sport. But first of all, it's a medical diagnosis, so that's out of the scope of a dietitian. But I'll get to chatting about what my role is in it. But by definition, REDS is a multifactorial syndrome that's characterized by the accumulation of harmful physiological and or psychological health and performance outcomes. So that can result from exposure to problematic low energy availability, which is where I come in. So REDS is a syndrome that affects both males and females. You probably heard it in the sport world, referred to as, could have been way back, athletic amenorrhea, and then it evolved into the female athlete triad, and then it evolved into the athlete triad, knowing that males are impacted as well. And so the all-encompassing term now is REDS. But so it impacts both males and females, and it can have detrimental outcomes, which can include decreases in energy metabolism, reproductive function, which is huge probably for your listeners, musculoskeletal health, big in the physio world. Immunity, you can have impaired even glycogen synthesis and cardiovascular and hematological health implications. So even looking at things like biomarkers for iron, and they can all individually or synergistically lead to impairments in well-being or increase the injury risk. So this can be mental or physical injury risk, and ultimately decrease sport performance. But I think our conversation today is mostly going to focus on health and well-being. So that's the all-encompassing REDS definition. And again, that's a medical diagnosis that you would get if you saw a sportsman or if you saw primary care who has a good background on athlete health. And there are some wonderful newly developed clinical assessment tools for screening for REDS if there's any primary care providers listening who don't necessarily have that sport hat. But
Can I
energy
stop you and
availability.
ask you a really, sorry, can I ask you a really quick
Yeah,
question though?
for
Because it made
sure.
me think, like, for people listening, is that what Brittany would have had tested? Because I think of the average person, like, she went to her doctor not asking them to test that. So, it, like, do you know what I'm asking? Like, with the average person, at like an athlete, because REDS is specific to sport. And so, if an athlete is thinking, oh, that sounds familiar, is that what Brittany had done?
So I don't know, because I wasn't there, but typically it's not necessarily like a specific test. It's usually a combination of tests or screening questionnaires or looking at the signs and symptoms that are presenting. And for me, I'm able to do that extra that extra step, which assesses the complete energy intake, the breakdown of macronutrients, looks at their body composition, relationship with food, and be able to give that individual some really specific feedback. But as far as tests that you'd see in a primary care provider, they would do some blood work. In severe cases, sometimes they do bone mineral density scans. Sometimes there are cardiovascular workups. They check vitals. But there's a clinical assessment tool. So the REDS CAT 2, REDS Clinical Assessment Tool 2, because it has been updated. And they have a list of screening tools that you can use. Well, they could even be self-administered, like in a waiting room. In a primary care clinic, so the athlete could potentially do and bring it in. And if they are flagging on one of those screening questionnaires, then it goes to a step two, which looks at some other indicators or risk factors for having REDS, and then it looks at them across the spectrum of severity.
That's what I just wanted to make sure, like that people understood, like it's not as simple as just a blood test, right? To say,
No.
no, yeah, exactly.
And I do see, like, in the space, I see a lot of, like, allied health really talking about REDS, like they can manage this. This is a medical diagnosis, and a sports dietitian is a huge member of that team. But certainly you're not the sole person in managing a such a medical diagnosis.
And sorry, I cut you off when you were explaining low energy availability.
Yeah, so if we start with, it's confusing. So energy availability, low energy availability, is it problematic? Is it not? So if we start with what is energy availability, and that is the dietary energy or food that we have left over and available for optimal body systems. So after we account for the energy that's expended from exercise. And the way we calculate that is actually a mathematical formula. So this is something I would have done with Britt. I actually saw her virtually, but she was able to get a body composition test done. So I had access to her fat-free mass, which is what we need to calculate this equation. But it'll look at your energy intake, so what you consume through food. So I tell an athlete, bring in a, write down what you eat in the run of the day. Then you subtract it from their exercise energy expenditure. So how much they're actually burning during an exercise, during a training session. And that can be calculated a variety of ways. So sometimes we can use heart rate data or watch data to estimate that. We can use what's called metabolic equivalence. And I like to do a variety and then kind of compare. So we get an idea of what their energy intake is like. So the total calories that they're eating in the run of the day, how much they're burning through exercise. And then we actually divide that by their fat-free mass. So that'll give us a number, and optimal energy availability is 45 kilocalories per kilogram of fat-free mass. So it sounds like really confusing and overwhelming, but in the dietitian space, like I have, calculators that doesn't take me long to get a number. And it's great because I can tell the athlete, you are in a clinical or subclinical state of low energy availability, and it's potentially impairing your health, and you are falling short by, X amount of calories in the run of the day. So it's really nice when you can quantify that rather than saying you're underfueling. So if I tell an athlete you're falling short on 1500 calories in the run of the day, that's a lot more significant than, and show them what that is. That's a lot more significant than saying you're not eating enough. So then they have an extra snack, right? So if you can really quantify it. So if somebody has low energy availability, it's basically a mismatch between the dietary energy that they consume through food and what they're expending through exercise, and just results in the body's energy needs not being met. And it can be adaptable or prolonged.
There's no way you
No,
could
okay.
go ahead. Yeah, go ahead. Say whatever you want to say.
Yeah, no, this definitely flags me as far as thinking even around. I know there's conversation around even changing the term for REDS, REDS, because I think they're finding in the general population, I think of all our new moms,
Oh my goodness.
right, who are from a, they're swamped, they're busy, so, their own fueling is not on their mind. Or if it is from a diet culture perspective, they think, if I'm not seeing these body composition changes that I'm looking for, I must need to like reduce intake more. Right? Like this
Really?
is these are our people that
Well,
we
and this is
see
why
all the time.
I listened to Melissa talk, and I think like this is so important for athletes. And what I was going to ask is, I'm getting to your point too, I promise you. What I was going to ask is like, how many people are doing what Brittany did? Like I said, you're not going to be able to answer this because you're not going to know the numbers on this, but like, how many athletes is this really affecting? Like, are you seeing more people starting? Like, is your practice getting busier with athletes? Are athletes saying, "Holy crap, this was a huge missing part for me"? I think that's one of my questions, and I just want to tell you my next kind of point, and then I'm going to go back to that. Is that, like, I don't want to lose the listeners that are listening and saying, like, I'm not an athlete. Like, I use athletes like in quotes because everybody's an athlete in a different way, but I don't want people to listen to this and think not relevant, because we all have like it's basically just like, what do you need and how are you fueling? And quite often there's a mismatch, and we're just talking about athletes right now, but I think that's what Britt's alluding to, is that this is like, this is, I think about the menopausal women that are starving themselves because they're gaining weight. Like whoa, there's so many people here. But if we go back to the athlete question for a second, because I just don't want the listeners that are don't consider them high level athletes to leave. But I'm wondering, like, are athletes thinking like, oh my God, my performance could be so much better if I figured this out? Like, are you seeing a trend? No.
No, I wish. So what's happening is usually an individual's in denial until they're, and I'll say until their performance declines.
Yeah,
So
totally.
if we're lucky, we're seeing them when, they're recognizing that their libido has decreased and their moods are lower. Their sleep is impacted. Their anxiety has increased. If we're lucky, we're getting them there before they have, a bone stress injury. But what's happening is they're usually in denial until their performance declines. And that's really when they've had that exposure to that problematic low energy availability for a long period of time. And you can't just take 2 days off now and we're gonna be fine. I'm gonna take an extra rest week. Like, no, we're talking some potentially some long-term, reduction in the amount of training and competition, or sometimes even removal. But I wanna I'm just thinking again for your listeners, and so let's think about those postpartum, folks that are have those pressures, those external pressures to fit a certain ideal. They are also sleep deprived, being pulled in every direction. And I'm seeing sometimes even clinicians, but I'm seeing influencers capitalize on these individuals' vulnerability. So now it says, okay, these things are off. I must go do some hormone testing. So I'm going to pay hundreds of dollars out of pocket for these hormone testing to be told your cortisol is high. Listen, if you're lacking sleep and doing fasted training and, asking everything of yourself with minimal resources, yeah, your cortisol is going to be high. I do see this in the non-athlete population very, very frequently. And then our resting metabolism will decrease, if we are in a chronic state of low energy availability or under eating. And the data in athletes will even show that if there's, you're falling short on 300 calories in the run of the day, that is, this can actually increase body fat percentage in elite female athletes. So, again, that's athlete data specific, but I see a lot of women that don't fuel properly. And then they think, okay, the body is changing. Now the answer is, I must do more, I must eat less. And it's a nasty cycle.
I think of going back to the athletes for just a second. I'm seeing more and more because I come from an area of acute care where I saw people fresh after surgeries and procedures. So I'm confident or feel comfortable seeing people very early after birth and giving them guidance. And so I think that this has made its way to some of the athletes, and I get a lot of people reach out internationally wanting to talk about, when can I start being active? I've actually been really surprised by the fact, like, I guess I just assumed that athletes had more support at their fingertips. Like, I've never been a high level athlete. So I think I just assumed that, especially like national athletes, that they had all of this help at their fingertips from a pelvic floor point of view. Like, I just assumed they'd be put in touch with someone. So I find myself always asking, like, why are you reaching out? How'd you find me? Don't, and you're paying out of pocket for this? And obviously they're willing because, like, they're, activity is such a passion for them. I'm wondering, like, I'm guessing, like, dietetics and nutrition is the same. Like, if they don't reach out for help, do they have, like, do a lot of these athletes have any support or guidance? Are there coaches or anyone on their team guiding them to help? Or is this literally if they hear through the grapevine or someone else sends them? I'm going to be sending this to a lot of athletes and just asking them what's your experience on this. But I guess if you have any messages before we maybe tie off some of the athletic piece a little bit, any messages for people listening to this that I assumed were getting this information? Fellow practitioners, be sure to check out Pelvic Health Supplies, a one-stop shop owned and operated by a physio that understands your needs. This company is unique because they aren't just a supplier, but also committed to making a difference. 1% of all sales are donated to the Canadian Foundation for Women's Health. Their range of products includes everything from disposable underpads, drape sheets, and reusable linens to anorectal balloon catheters, lubricants, gloves, and so much more. They offer flat rate shipping and no cost on orders over $200 anywhere in Canada. Visit their website at pelvichealthsupplies.com. And a little cherry on top for those of you listening to this podcast, use the code PODCAST15 for 15% off your next purchase.
So I think coaches have a big role to play in, recognizing that body composition is not a predictor of, your performance. It can, be a health parameter, but not providing any external pressures to, change your body and keeping it on, fueling that body. As far as access, I mean, there are, at the elite level, you have access to, sports dietitians, you have access to sports med, but again, it's that athlete mindset, that athlete identity. So I, in my own personal journey of returning to sport postpartum, I intentionally kept my mileage very low because I knew what the data said. I knew when, when you should return to running. I knew that you can perform, the same or better postpartum, but I also knew the injury risk went up really high. And that's where, the dietitian hat comes on. I was like, of course the injury risk is going up. Like, you're still breastfeeding, like you're sleep deprived, like you don't have a personal chef, just, shoveling food in. Of course it's high. So when I look at the elite athletes that, would be role models in my eyes, unfortunately, some of those in their postpartum journey, you see, I saw red flags, and it did. It was really sad for me to be like, how is this happening? Like, I know what's going to happen. And yes, they did eventually get, injured. And the science supports that there are, injuries that happen with return to sport, too soon, postpartum, or, asking too much of the body. And I really wish that they had better support. So I don't think anybody is exempt. And sometimes people have more access to resources, but don't always use it.
That makes sense. So then, Britt, will you talk a little bit? Go ahead.
Sure. Oh, I just find in my opinion, it's conversations that like these that will help spread awareness, like within athletic communities. There are certain culture cultural kind of norms that have to be changed, in my opinion. I mean, Melissa would be definitely more savvy to that in the endurance athlete space. But the lighter is faster, the lighter is better mentality, in weight class sports. So whether that's combat sports or whether that's weightlifting, like I participate in, there are various reasons why someone might choose to drop a weight class. And sometimes there may be external pressures or drivers, I guess, on that. Within the communities that I've been in, it's been extremely positive and supportive, which is great. But I think there needs to just be more conversations like these to build that awareness.
And I think, the reason why I focus in endurance, but I'm going to accept somebody like Brittany because what if they don't have support, right? I don't work with weight class sports, day in, day out. I have, worked with some rowers. I've went through the literature and combat sports, and I pull from what exists and use my best clinical judgment to support these athletes. But so if it's somebody like a weight class sport, or if it's somebody in an endurance sport where power to weight ratio is going to be advantageous to performance, or be, the answer to whether or not they can actually perform, they need to, they need to decrease the total amount of weight or body fat, then that's potentially where adaptable low energy availability can come in. So it's that short term low energy availability that's more or less benign, and it's reversible. So if an athlete needs to change their body composition, if it is going to, get them to this competition, or if it's going to improve, potentially improve their endurance performance, then we can have an athlete in a state of, lower energy availability for a short period of time monitored, but then it's reversible. So you don't try to maintain that new body composition, or you went to the Olympics and you're going to maintain that body composition, for 6 months prior. We periodize things. So you periodize the nutrition, you periodize the body composition throughout the year, targeting health and performance. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you both segued into what I was going to say, because Brittany started off this conversation explaining, like, yeah, I thought I had these hormone deficiencies. I met with Melissa, but I went in with some biases, kind of like I'm a health professional. I'm not mocking you, Brittany, when I make that face, but like I felt like it was a mocking face. I'm a health professional, like I'm a healthy eater, and so I guess I just want you to pick that story up a bit. Like, then what did you take from that experience? And you still had to drop that weight class. So, I'm guessing it wasn't just that I stopped eating, but like, what did you learn from that experience?
basically, I think Melissa already kind of alluded to some of the changes that occur when we're in a more prolonged state of like less in than what we actually need. So I had noticed like a reduced appetite. So for me, it was natural to be like, well, why am I eating? Like I'm not hungry. And so that prolonged state of low energy availability for me was unintentional. Like it was just like these habits that developed over time. And when she brought that to the forefront for me and to my attention with very user-friendly strategies, like really it was increasing my carbohydrates with meal times, and it was being more intentional with what I was eating, like during and right after training, that had a huge impact. And so it was awesome in that it was very convenient. Like I guess the other part that I want our listeners to recognize is it doesn't have to be complicated. And the internet already overwhelms us with complicated information, which I think is what makes the nutrition space so overwhelming for people. And Melissa was amazing at just making it super simple, health first. And I noticed very positive changes quickly as far as how well I was recovering, how my energy levels were.
Because you weren't in denial. It's, not everyone notices changes so quickly. So that's great. I wanted to add two things. So the low energy availability can be intentional or unintentional, right? So if it's intentional, like it can be disordered eating patterns, it can be clinically diagnosed eating disorders, it can be significant cognitive dietary restraint where an individual is, constantly wondering about how that food is going to impact their body weight, shape, size, which there is some data in postmenopausal women that shows that that can increase stress hormones. But then it can be unintentional as well. So, it could be a lack of appetite. Hey, the body wasn't prompting me to eat more. It could be food insecurity. It could be, like, think about my varsity athletes, a busy schedule. Think about those new parents, very busy schedule. And just, it's hard when you need to eat at such frequent intervals throughout the day. And sometimes people are just unsure of their energy needs. I asked this question to my sport nutrition class a couple weeks ago. Does anyone know how much they need to eat in the run of the day? No. Right? You don't know. And when your needs are really high, sometimes it's nice for just, to have that practical, this is what you need in the run of the day to fuel your body appropriately. And it doesn't need to be sexy. Eat enough food. Then we can, look at the macronutrient distributions and type and timing. Once that's ticked, okay, now let's talk a little bit about performance supplements. We don't need to be eating depending on our menstrual cycle phase and, all these other biomarkers. Nutrition can be really, really simple sometimes.
Like, to me, it like really parallels, and Brittany already talked about how some of these symptoms mirror pelvic floor symptoms, which may take someone to a pelvic floor physio in the first place. But I think it sounds like my wheelhouse is more pelvic health than nutrition. So to me, it sounds a bit more intimidating or more like, oh, geez, where does someone start? Or I think as a parent, like, what things should I be teaching my kids? But to us as pelvic health physios, I think that sometimes they're like, oh my gosh, this is basic stuff. Like, not belittling anyone, but like, wow, it's too bad we don't learn more about peeing and pooping and normal habits as kids. And like, it sounds like very sometimes because we talk about it all day, kind of like, oh geez, this is basic information. And I hear you saying the same thing is if only we could have some of this basic education. Of course, you need to be able to customize it or individualize it for people in their sport or people in their specific stage of life, but I think we're all just missing some basic nutritional guidance, don't you think? Yeah. As far as what to eat and there's so many I listen to, like this has changed massively even in the last 5 years, like just plant-based diet, keto diet, all, no carbs, like, and I think everyone's really struggling to like crack the code. But I think what you're saying is it's much simpler than we're making it out to be.
Our bodies they're resilient, they're adaptable. I wish if our body wasn't fueled that it would just be like, I'm on the ground, I'm done. But no, it will continue on. It will do some insanely stuff. Sometimes it'll grow a human,
Yeah.
right? If we're not doing it enough, like our bodies are so resilient. So that's interesting.
What were you going to say, Britt?
You lost me.
That's
I'm
okay.
not sure.
So then let's talk. I mean, we've already, is there anything else you guys want to add about? I mean, we've talked a little bit about athletes and we've talked about postpartum moms. We've touched on kind of perimenopausal, menopausal women and some of their, different pressures. Is there anything else you guys want to say about those populations? I think again, similar message is sometimes we're not taking in what we need, and that we're going to have symptoms that present that we maybe blame other things. Like, this is all hormone deficiency, or this is all depression, or this is all pelvic floor issues. Is there anything else you guys want to say about that, about those populations?
I mean, I think for me as a clinician, it just if there are other healthcare providers, clinicians listening, it's just to always treat the individual as a whole, right? Like to think about that big picture influence. Like for us as pelvic floor physios, it's very routine for us to dive into questions around stress, right? We know how stress affects the nervous system, which would have an impact on the pelvic floor. I think asking basic questions too around food, like it doesn't have to be complicated, but if we start to get those flags of either under fueling or restriction or anything from that matter, then to include nutrition as your a part of your team, like you would.
Or to think about it with every person. And I think this is where a lot of, let's say, physios listening or other practitioners will say, oh, that's not in my wheelhouse. Like, you know, like, I mean, I ask people, but very general. I don't think I ask enough. And so I wonder if maybe Britt, from what you've learned, and Melissa, like, will you, so for any practitioners listening, like, what are some questions then that we should be asking that aren't out of our scope of practice?
So I think questions like, do you miss meals, is a huge one, because, and this is not just for like that athlete population, right? This is sedentary individuals should be eating three times a day and snacks. Like this is, you know, and that's a hard concept sometimes for athletes to grasp, but, so I think asking, do you miss any meals? And if so, like you can touch on the concept of within a day energy deficiency and just saying, you know, if the body is falling short on the amount of food, you know, it needs, or just falling short on the, it's burned more calories than it has consumed. So fasted training, missing a meal, poor recovery, then that can have impacts on our stress hormones, our reproductive hormones, and our resting metabolic rate. So it can decrease our the rate at which our body burns. So I think that that's a really big one and a common one I see, you know, through with a lot of clients and specifically busy moms. They're just having a hard time being able to prioritize food every 3 to 4 hours. So it doesn't necessarily need to be this perfect balanced meal. First, you need to be fed. Okay. If you are now being fed at regular intervals, great. That is going to support, you know, your mental health rather than going without. Once that box is ticked, you know, okay, maybe it's time for a conversation about, you know, what would some optimal fuel look like?
So and then timing, would you say, I'm just trying to think of like, say, for example, the education our kids get, or like the basic education that most people have are around like the four food groups, right? So would you say like, even just saying like, yeah, do you miss meals? And do you feel you eat a bit of all the food groups or something like that? Like, is it, you know, even just to ask to that? And again, we don't necessarily have to be all ask all the counseling, but, or provide all the counseling, but then maybe that gives us an idea if they're having certain symptoms and we know that there's food groups they're missing, that maybe that's when we bring up, have you ever talked to anyone like a dietitian or, you know, like, would that be another way? I'm just trying to think of like the majority of the population, like where they're at. You know, because like we've talked about, like the internet and social media are full of guidance that is not really good. And so I'm just trying to think of like, you know, the simplest information we can give people.
Do you eliminate any food groups for sure? Or is there anything that you restrict? Because women will often restrict carbohydrate. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, there are, you know, health implications of that, there are performance implications, and youth, that's a big one as well. And we get some external pressures from parents who are afraid to give chocolate milk after a game or afraid to give a sports drink because of their own, you know, conceptions around sugar. But the message I like to give is, you know, whether you're having a you know, a sweet potato or some quinoa, or whether you're having a sports drink, the end result is it's going to be glucose in the blood. And that's really what, you know, the brain is burning. That's what is going to be stored in the muscles and used as fuel for exercise. And we do know that not getting enough carbohydrate can have significant negative health consequences. So that's a big one. Do you follow a low carbohydrate style of eating, or do you, you know, restrict, or, you know, do you restrict other food groups? Because another thing that I see with low energy availability is excessive amounts of fiber. So if it's a very plant forward diet, and they are displacing, the intake of total calories because the fiber intake is high. And athletes always think need to have enough protein. So they'll prioritize the protein, they'll prioritize the vegetables and end up missing out on, carbohydrates and total energy. So I think those are, without getting into too much detail, when you ask those questions, it's worth asking and then trying to point them in a direction of somebody you trust.
I don't know if it's the same in Nova Scotia, but every province is so different. But in BC, in my community for sure, they're starting to add you can access a dietitian through your family practice. So you have to, not every family practice has them, but a lot of them are starting to. And so I have sent before, and I've accessed for one of my children before. I've, contacted my doctor and said, this is the issue. I heard that I can see a dietitian through there. And so, yeah, it was covered through like the health region. Is that like, what are people's options? Because I think you work in a private setting. Is that right, Melissa? And so for some people, cost is an issue. And a lot of people obviously prioritize their finances in different ways. But what if someone's listening to this and they think, oh, I could really use some help, but I don't feel like I have the financial ability to do that? What should they do? What are their
So it
options?
depends on the province, but in a lot of communities, you can access a dietitian for free, like through a family health team. Or if you have access, you might need a referral from your primary care provider, or in a hospital outpatient setting. Check to see if you have insurance. If you have insurance, you can access private practice, and they can direct bill. But there are pretty good resources out there. So maybe it's if this is an athlete who is concerned about, REDS, then looking into, I think it's a relative, I don't know the exact name on it now, but there are like relative energy deficiency in sports org or something like that. Like there are some websites that can that offer free educational material if it's not, or if you're not looking for individualized approach.
I can link a lot of that in the show notes.
Yeah, I'll have to follow up with
Yeah.
that.
So if we were to make this super practical, so let's say someone's listening to this, or else you're a practitioner that works with people. They come to you with symptoms, right? And in our case, as pelvic health physios, they come to us usually, I always say, like with embarrassing symptoms related to their pelvic floor is usually what makes them think of us. And like Brittany said, we think of the whole person. We are asking a lot of questions around their bowel and bladder habits, stress levels, do you sleep? We're talking now, like we should be asking a little bit about what they eat or some of their eating habits. And their exercise habits. Like we ask a lot of different questions. And so we're kind of being detectives to figure out what is contributing to this person's symptoms, right? And they'll rarely be one thing. But I think our biggest take-home message is that not taking in enough fuel or the right type of fuel or a good balance of fuel can create a lot of symptoms that we blame on other things, right? That we say, this is simply hormones. This is simply a weak pelvic floor. This is simply stress. And sometimes we don't give enough merit to the nutrition so that as practitioners or you as a person that's having symptoms, that's something that you should consider and just kind of really think, is this something that I need to consider? And then find the right help. Is there something I'm missing about that take-home message, ladies? Or anything you want to add to that? Is that our take-home message?
Well, I think for me, bringing awareness around REDS and the long-term health implications, right? Like we are talking about reduction in bone mineral density. We are talking about lifelong repercussions as far as potentially fertility. Like these are like big important things. And I think of my daughter now and what information she's getting going going forward around fueling her body for health first versus performance. And I just think that ultimately it's setting people up for success, for longevity success, I guess. And so, yeah, I think that's the take home message. I think, you know, for me as a practitioner, I always really emphasize kind of the pillars, right? So whether that's sleep as a pillar, movement as a pillar, nutrition as a pillar, like those things are so important as foundations. And I don't want to be naive as a practitioner to think that my tools in my toolbox are going to be the only thing that this person needs. Yeah. That'd be mine.
Go ahead, Melissa.
I'm trying to think through mine, and I think I'll do like a take home for, you know, if this is a physiotherapist who is, you know, working with a client they suspect is under eating. So if they're screening and they're having gastrointestinal symptoms, if they do have sleep disturbances, if they're having lower moods, if there's reduced training capacity, if they have irregular menstrual cycles, or, you know, they're not ovulating, that is more than enough to say that you should chat to your, you know, your medical provider about, just call it under eating, even like under fueling, and, you know, bring that discussion to, you know, make sure that person's, you know, seeking support. When it comes to the parents and the athletes, I think parents, the number one thing that they need to do, and coaches, is role modeling. I always say this. So your kids, your athletes, any of the littles in your life, they need to see you eat a diverse diet. So they need to see you eat, you know, your takeout, your burger and fries, you know, your meals on the road, just the same as they need to see you eat a balanced plate at home. And that sometimes I feel like my role as a dietitian, and I'm also an athlete, but I do some coaching with the local cross country team. I actually think that my role as a role model is sometimes more effective than my role as an athlete or a sports dietitian. So being that female role model that they need to see. And then my advice to athletes, I think would be flexible with eating. So being inflexible is, you know, is a potential, you know, risk factor for developing a low energy availability. Remember that every carb that you eat is going to end up as glucose in the blood. It's going to be what your muscle is eventually going to be burning as energy. And the body's carbohydrate stores are limited. So you need to consume them regularly at regular intervals throughout the day, around training, sometimes during training and after training. And I think I'd be remiss if I didn't touch on weight or body composition, but I think my advice would be to eat as much as you can while remaining weight stable, if that makes sense. So try, you know, if you are at a weight that supports health, that supports your performance, and there's no potential, you know, negative consequences. And so if you're at a, say, a healthy weight, stay there and eat as much as possible to maintain that. Sometimes people think if they want to get better, they need to train more or eat less. But really, you just need to, you need to be available. You need to show up to practice. You need to show up to, you know, training consistently, and that consistency and minimal days absence is what's going to get you that, you know, that success, not fueling less and training more.
I also think one other message I think is important is that our view on health is changing a bit. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that our healthcare system used to be, we used to wait for kind of like top-down messaging. Like we used to wait for our doctor to tell us to do something, or, kind of like we were almost assuming someone else was looking out for us. And I think that's really changing, and that we all have to be thinking about ourselves. I have so many, whether it be family members or clients, that are in that, let's say, 60 to 80 year old range now. And they're like, oh my gosh, like I didn't know any of this. I didn't know that taking that antidepressant was affecting my bone mineral density. And all of a sudden, I'm osteoporotic. And I feel like I was, do you know what I mean? I felt like I was just given this for this one symptom. And I didn't realize that exercise was important. I didn't realize loading my bones was important. And, but we wait for that message from someone. Like, I think that's what a lot of them say. Like, I was waiting for, like, nobody told me. I think that's a really gray area for people now, is that you don't want people to be consumed with trying to find information and spend all their time, but you do have to think about yourself and in your and your individuality, and like you said, critically think about how you're feeling, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a good, I mean, a good message in the sense of that's like the receptiveness I try and have when I'm being a detective in any person entering the door. Like, is this person really in the right spot? And what information are they lacking? And how can I support you as a human in navigating this with what is within my scope of like evidence-informed information. So they're getting real information, not who knows what they're finding on the internet, which can be pretty daunting at times.
Well,
Yeah.
thanks, ladies. I appreciate your
Thank
time. It's
you.
getting to be late for you guys on the East Coast. And so I
Yes.
appreciate your time, and I appreciate your information and your message that food is fuel. And that's a wrap. If you enjoyed the show, can I ask you a big favor? Would you do one of three things for me? Number one, leave a review, because we could all use a little positive feedback sometimes. Number two, download the episodes, because it helps me see what people are interested in. Or number three, share it with somebody else, because sharing is caring. Catch you next time.